Good morning. Today's daf in Kiddushin Samech Aleph or in Samech Amud Beis. We are starting right before the Mishnah. There are just a couple of short points that we're going to be making before starting the new Mishnah here in the third parak of the Masechta. We recently started the third parak. We're talking about tonight various conditions that are set into a get. First Mishnah had to do with Shlichus, but then from that point going forward, we talked about tonight. We're talking about tonight, and that is that I set a condition into the get. So coming up in today's daf, one of the biggest sugyas regarding Tanai, and that's Tanai Kafel. So that is coming up. That's a good part of today's daf. It's so to say the spotlight. But before we get there, but we still have other points that we're going to do, and that is yesterday. So to some of the Tanai were just simply a display of wealth. All right. In yesterday's mission, we went over various cases where either he was going to be Mekadisher with a bonus, a signing bonus, if you will. I didn't say that yesterday. Signing bonus. So that's one possibility. Or Amanashe. Amanashe Yeshlem Asayim Zuz. In other words, they're just simply that he has a certain amount of money in his account. In other words, the condition, in order for the marriage to be chal, in order for the condition to be chal, so he has to actually have a certain amount of money in his account. Good. So those are the points that we made yesterday in the Mishnah. And now we are in Samech Amud Beis, and we're right before the Mishnah. About four or five lines before the Mishnah, two lines before they start getting wide. No, we did that already. The first wide line, Amanash Yeshli Masayim Zuz V'chule. Good. Okay, so V'necho Shem Yeshlam. V'otani V'dechayshe Shem Yeshlam. Okay, now, he made it tonight and he said that Kedushin is going to be Chal, but only if I have 200 Zuz. So basically, he is attaching the Kedushin to a condition of a certain amount of wealth. And the Mishnah says that if he has it, the Kedushin is Chal. And if he doesn't have it, the Kedushin is not Chal. The Gemara's question is very simple. Well, even if he doesn't have it, how do we know he doesn't have it? Meaning, where do you keep your money? So nowadays, the minhag is to keep your money in the bank. So that's the minhag. Or, you know, to invest it, whatever. So, but back in the good old days, so where was your money? So in other words, people hid their money. Under the pillow, under the bed. I have no idea where they hid it. The question of the Gemara is very simple. In other words, how do we know he doesn't have the money? It could very well be that he has the money. And even though right now he's like, oops, I don't have the money. How do we know that? So the Gemara says, Lokasha habikrushe vada habikrushe safik. So the Gemara says, that's an excellent point. And here's what we're saying. What we're saying is that if he definitely has the money, i.e., we have proven that he has the money, so the Kedushin is now a Kedushin vandai. And if he doesn't have the money, we're not saying there's no Kedushin. All we're simply saying is that there's no Kedushin Vadai. In other words, but there is still Kedushin Safek. In other words, what we have to now at least suspect is that he has the money. So the Kedushin is not definitive, but rather it's a Safek. At that point going forward. Which then brings about all the nafkaminas that we've spoken about the last couple of days. Which is that obviously if she wants to move on with her life, she's going to need to get. And if she accepts Kedushin from somebody else, that Kedushin is going to be a Kedushin Safek. V'chule, v'chule. Now, Tana, Amna, sorry, let me read the heading. Amna Sharech Masayim Zuz. Next point to the Mishnah. I'm going to be Mekarish you, but only on the condition I show you 200 Zuz. So Tana, let's come. Elalaris Mishalom. Okay, so in other words, can you be cute over here and just say, oh, you want to see 200 Zuz? No problem. Walks her over to the bank, asks the teller, hey, could you show her 200 zuz? Right? That's, in other words, it's cute, but in other words, that's not what he meant. In other words, the Braisa says that clearly what he meant was is that he's going to show her money that he has. V'im haralal shulchan einu mekudeshes. Okay. Let's say he showed her money on the table. The Kedushin is not going to be chal. So pshita lo tzricha da'afagav denake dami be'iska. So the Gemara says, well, if he's showing her money on the table, it's not his money. So obviously the Kedushin is not going to be chal. The Gemara says no. I'll tell you where the Chiddush in the Mishnah lies, and that is that he's an investor. In other words, he's investing other people's money. Okay. Now granted, in other words, he'll make a commission. However, he earns his living. But if it's not his money, even if it's his to invest, but that's not his money. Somebody else's money is just given to him, to invest. That doesn't qualify. In other words, when he says that my condition of marriage is going to be contingent on money that I have, it has to be money that he's in ownership of, not in money that he's in control of. Good. Ad Kan, that takes us to the end of yesterday's daf, the end of yesterday. But as we start with the Mishnah, next Mishnah, you're going to hear it's a little bit more of the same, right? At least for the first part of today's daf. Amna Sheishli Beis Korafar, Harezim Mekudeshes, V'yeshla. Okay, so number one, promising that he has a certain amount of real estate. Beis Korafar. Beis Korafar is the amount of land that you can plant 30 sa'a. Right? The measurement of land can obviously be a linear measurement, measuring its length and width, but back in the day, so another way of measuring land would be based on its productivity. And the amount where you can plant 30 sa'a, so that is also described as a base core. That's your standard measurement for land. Anyway, but regardless, that's just a measuring point. He says that he has got a base core, so the marriage is going to be chal if, in fact, he has a base core. If further in the contingency, he says that not only do I have land, but I have land in a certain area, so then the condition is only going to be chal if that not only he has land, but he has land in that particular area. Now, if he says there, I'm going to be mekadesh you, but only on the condition that I show you land. So once again, just like we said in the previous Mishnah, the condition is going to be chal, but only if he shows her land, and specifically his land. Okay. So the but if he just shows her a valley, a bika, and oh, you want to see land? Here. Well, look at that valley right over there. So in the mekadesh, obviously the condition is not going to be a valid condition. Okay, and so, right, this Mishnah that we just learned together sounds awfully similar. Meaning if you just review the previous Mishnah and you look at this Mishnah, they're identical to one another. The only notable difference is that the previous Mishnah we were talking about money, in this Mishnah we're talking about property. Okay, but after that, the Mishnahs are the same. So we're going to tackle that point in just a moment. Gemara first, V'necha Shema Yeshlo, V'o Tanya, Cheshin Shema Yeshlo. A question that we asked moments earlier on the previous Mishnah, we're asking the same question on this Mishnah. And that is that even if he's unable to show her land that qualified and matched his condition, but maybe he has land. Meaning, isn't it possible that he's got properties just somewhere else? So, Lokasha, Abikudushe Vada, Abikudushe Safek. Again, the same answer of the Gemara. And that is that if we know definitely he has land, the condition is Bivadaos. If, on the other hand, he's unable to show land, but in other words, suspicions are that maybe he has lands elsewhere, so now we don't know if there is a kedushin. We also don't know if there is no kedushin. Where are we? Limbo, halachic limbo, suffix. We're in a state of suffix. Same point that we made on the previous Mishnah. Lama l'lemitzle gabi arva, lama l'lemitzle gabi zuze. Okay, the obvious question, which is two Mishnahs back to back, making exactly the same point. One's by money, the other's by property. Why do I need both? Sricha. The Gemara says, I'll tell you why I need both. If we only had it regarding money, I would have said, you know what people do with their money? They hide their money. So, Kamash Milan. But when it comes to land, in other words, isn't land public? And yes, the answer, of course, is yes. Right? Right? All transactions of land are public record. That's not a modern phenomenon. That was true back in the time of the Gemara. Right? Lands were always transacted with documentation, with a shtar, with edim, and so it basically was public record. And so you could make the argument, you could try to make the argument that when it comes to land, so there's no such thing as we don't know about lands that he has, right? That's what you could have said. Therefore, I need both Mishnayos. I need a Mishnah by Zuzim, and I need a Mishnah by Karka, because without the Mishnah regarding Karka, I simply would have made an argument that Karka is not the same. Okay. The Gemara doesn't do what it normally does, and that is, it doesn't play both sides. Meaning, why do I need this Mishnah? I need this Mishnah because of this point. Well, then why do I need that Mishnah? So the truth of the matter is that we really, all we did is really went one direction in terms of the Tzri Chusa. All right. Right, he promises her not only that he has land, but in a certain location. That was his condition, and if that condition is not met, so then the condition does not take effect. The Gemara says we would have figured that out. That's called pashut. It's obvious. I don't think we needed a Mishnah to teach us. So now, I could have made the argument, at least as a Havamina. The argument could be, I know I promised that I had land there, but when all said and done, I do have land. It just happens to be somewhere else. And do you really care? Meaning, don't you just want to know that you're financially secure and I have the land, and isn't that enough? Oh, kamash malan. So the chiddush is no. In other words, as part of the condition, if what you set into the condition, not only you have land, but in a certain location, so the only way you're satisfying condition is only when you have land in that particular location. Amen asharich beis kor afar. So tana lo niskavno zu ela liros mishalom. Again, same brisa that we said in the previous mission, we're saying over here. When he says, I'm going to show you land, his intention was land that I own. Not just, I'm going to show you land. Now, if he shows her a valley, the kedushin is not chal pshita. Again, over here. So that's obvious. In other words, here, I know I promised you that I'm going to show you land. Come. Let me show you some land. See that valley over there? There's land. So the Gemara says, obviously, that's no good. In other words, that's not what he meant. What he meant was to show his own land. So, lo tzricha denaka bidistura. The Gemara says, I'll tell you what the hafamina would be, is that he's not just showing her any land, he's showing her a land in which he's a sharecropper. So, in other words, what the Gemara is effectively telling us is, don't confuse sharecropper and shareholder. Not the same. A shareholder is where you have shares in the land itself. You own shares of the land. There you're an owner. But if you're a sharecropper, so all you're doing is you're splitting profits of the land that you're working. But that doesn't make you an owner of the land. And even though you're a sharecropper in that property, and you know now you're impressing her, it's great. You may very well impress her, but you didn't satisfy the condition. The condition was, is I'm going to show you land that I own. And over here, if all he is a sharecropper, which is not nothing. In other words, it's a big deal. It's working. It's making money. But in other words, but it doesn't satisfy the condition because he hasn't owned it. Okay. Lagabe hektesh tenan. So we are on the very, very bottom of Samach Amud Beis. We're about to turn to Samach Aleph Amud Aleph. And basically, for the remainder of the first part of today's daf, we're setting up. In other words, here comes the question, but the question is going to require a little bit of setup. So let me just quickly introduce over here your makish, your property. Dedicating your property, donating your property to the Beis HaMikdash. Beis HaMikdash now can make usage of the property up until the Yovel year. Now, in order for you to get back that land, so you have to be poda, you have to redeem that land. Everything is going to be prorated based on the number of years that we have from now until Yovel. So, and I'm going to be redeeming it at what price? So, if it's a mechira, this is all, by the way, this is a crash course in Erechin. Meaning, before learning the Gemara in Erechin, I'm going to sound a little bit like what I'm sounding right now. In Erechin, if we're doing Erechin, I do it with much more detail. Over here, this is just a short version. So, if it's a sale, and I'm redeeming the land in a Yovel system, so I'm going to be redeeming it at market value, whatever market value is. If, on the other hand, we're talking about Hektesh, I'm redeeming it from Hektesh, so then it's not market value. What is? It's a fixed rate. A fixed rate that the Torah set up. So the Torah set up a rate of 50 shkalim in a 49-year term. In other words, 49 years is the maximum number of years that you could be donating to the Beis HaMikdash. And now, and that's going to be for a base core. Again, a base core is a certain measurement of land. So that is going to be the fixed rate of redemption when it comes to Hektesh. Land that you dedicated to Hektesh. Okay? Simple. I mean, whatever. That's just the ideas. So, legabe hektesh tanan. So, here's what we know when it comes to hektesh. As we are now on the top of Samach Aleph Amud Aleph, makdush adei b'shas yovel. The noseh b'zerach chomer saorim chamishim shekel kasef. Okay, good. So, the first thing that we're learning together is just simply the rate. Good. That's how much you have to redeem it for. Now, here comes the part that got to zoom in on. Hayu nekai mamukim asar tvachim. Oh. Salam gavam asar tfachim ein nimdamdim ima. Pachus mikan nimdamdim ima. So over here in terms of surveying the land for the redemption. So again, it's a fixed rate, a certain amount of money per area. Okay, I'm really making it simple. Okay, so when we're surveying the land and measuring the land, so what is not included in the survey? So it's going to be any hole deeper than 10 tfachim, any rock higher than 10 tfachim. They are not surveyed together with the land. Good. Now, v'havina ba'nihita b'hadi ara lo kachu niktushu ba'api nafshayu. So they're not surveyed with the land. Great. That part I got. Here's the question. Are they going to be measured on their own? Independent. Meaning maybe they should be measured independent of the land. In other words, they demand and deserve their own particular survey. Or maybe no. Maybe they're just simply negated and ignored altogether. Simple question. The Mishnah is not clear about that point. And the Gemara says, well, maybe. So, in other words, if you're measuring the rocks and the holes, and it's less than the base core, so is that significant? So the Gemara just simply wants to clarify, yes, of course that's significant. So the Uriminu. So Sedei, right? This is the psukim at the end of Sefer Vayikra. This is in Parshas Bechukosai. These are all the halachas of redeeming stay mikdash. So Sedei. The drasha effectively tells us that it does not matter the size of the land. In other words, there's going to be redemption for any land of any size. Now, how do you figure out the rate? Again, everything is just simply going to be prorated based on the original formula. But the point, of course, is that it doesn't have to be a base core. It could be half of that, could be a quarter of that, could be a fraction of that. It simply doesn't matter. So Amar Marukva Barchama Hacha Benekai Malay Mayimaskinan. As far as the Mishnah is concerned, when the Mishnah says, you see the holes over there, ignore the holes. We're not measuring the holes. So Marukva tells us that the Mishnah in Erchin is talking about we're ignoring holes. You know why? The holes are filled with water. If the holes are filled with water, it's basically like a mini lake, really mini lake. But in other words, but the lake has to have a depth of 10 tefachim. And the point is that you cannot plant in that area. The redemption of a land dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash is a function of it's plantable. I can plant on that land. So over here, the hole is filled with water, and I can't plant on it. It's lab nezrininu and deganami diktani domi del salaim gavoim. And in fact, when you carefully read the Mishnah, you know we're right about this point. Because the Mishnah says, what are we excluding? Stones that are 10 tefachim high and holes that are 10 tefachim deep. Now, if it's just a hole, so in other words, you can plant in that area. Granted, right? Inconvenient, but you can plant in that area. But in other words, we're comparing it to stones. You know, you can't plant on a stone. You can't plant in a hole that's 10 tefachim deep when it's filled with water. So so if it's not Royal Israel, if you can't plant in that area, so even if it's less than 10 tefachim, shouldn't the conclusion be the same? So Hanu Nagne Da'ara Mikre. Shizu Da'ara Mikre. So the Gemara says the Gemara says no. When we have stones that are less than 10 tefachim high, when we have holes in the ground that are less than 10 tefachim deep, so the Gemara says, you know what they are? It's part of the personality of the land. Now, my language over here is not really matching the Gemara's language. In other words, nagne da'ara, basically, little indentations in the land. Or shedra da'ara, literally translated as a vertebrae, the spine of the land. In other words, every land has got little bumps and ridges. In other words, it's part and parcel of the land. Right, people when buying their esrog, right? I don't want a smooth esrog. I want one that's bumpy. In other words, that's the personality of the esrog. Now, I'm sure with land, I'm sure people want a flatter land. As if I knew, as if I, you know, I have ever worked the land. Okay, but the point of the Gemara is as follows: anything less than 10 tefachim is just part and parcel of the land. In other words, that it comes with the territory. Here, I'm saying that literally. Once it's higher than 10 tefachim, both in height or in depth, right? Higher than 10 tefachim, deeper than 10 tefachim. And when we say depth, we're also meaning that's filled with water. It simply no longer is operational. I can't plant in that area. And therefore, not to be incorporated in the land itself. Okay. This is all set up. So we just learned what is the status of when surveying the land, do we include parts of the land that are really deep and really high? And by hektish, the answer is no. Good. Next. When it comes to the sale, so how do we regard these ridges and these bumps on land when it comes to sale? So when it comes to sale, they are not included in the sale. Why? Because when you're buying a property from somebody else, so this is a simple purchase of property. When you're buying a property from somebody else, you want contiguous property. You do not want non-contiguous property. And even if the property gives the appearance as non-contiguous, you don't want that. In other words, we will assume that the default thought process of the buyer is that the buyer would always want a contiguous property. And so therefore, when I got these ridges and I got these indentations and depressions in the ground, so they are definitely not included and incorporated in the sale. And here, it's not a function of planting. It's a function of what kind of property does a person want to buy. Okay, so we now know that when it comes to hektesh, so indentations are included and incorporated in the survey. When it comes to sales, they're not included and incorporated in the sale. Okay, good. That's all set up. That was a lot of setup. Now that we're here, now the Gemara gets to ask this question. Hachamai, lehektesh madmin alei or lemecher madmin alei? So now, with a promise that my hektesh is going to be valid, but only on the condition that I have this much land. So now, in order to see whether the hektesh works or not, we're going to be surveying the land. How do we survey it? Do we survey it in the category of hektesh, or do we survey it in the category of mecher? Perfect. Perfect question. Over here, we're not selling the land, but at the same time, however, he's promising her that he has a certain amount of land. Maybe that's a function of, well, in other words, how would it do on the market? Or maybe it's a function of, I just simply have a certain amount of land. Period. So the Gemara says, "Mistabelekdish madminalei da amalei ana tarchanu v'zarana maisina." Beautiful. And the Gemara's answer is that it's going to go in the category of hektesh, not in the category of sale. Again, remember, in the category of sale, what is sale a function of? The people want to buy contiguous property. When it comes to hektesh, what is that a function of? Whether or not it's plantable or it's not plantable. We've established that as long as it is not filled with water, it's plantable. And so therefore, that's included in the survey. Over here, what he's promising her is the following. I have land. I have a certain amount of land. And why is that important? Because what I'm going to do is I'm going to work the land, I'm going to plant, and I'm going to take care of you. Good. Right? Either I'll give you the produce or I'll sell the produce. Whatever the case is, it's a function of planting. And so now, she's not buying the property. All she's doing is just simply being promised as a condition, as part of the hektesh, that he has a certain amount of land. He'll say to her, this is the last line of the Gemara, Ana tarchana v'zarana maisina. Right? I'll work the land. Meaning, there are depressions in the land, and now it's going to be harder to plant? That's my problem. And not your problem.
In Erevin, for a depression or an elevation to be its own reshut, it had to have a certain, not only height, can't stop, but also don't have a certain area.
Right.
Here, there's no mention of area at all. It doesn't matter how the horizontal amount is irrelevant.
Right. Right. In other words, the Gemara over here is not taking into account slope. And yeah. Right. Correct. You're very good. The other David in my life, my chavrus in the morning, so he was also thinking of how this relates to Erevin. Okay. You're in good company. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the first part of today's daf. Wonderful. Okay, so basically we just did, we covered the first part of today's daf, and we covered another chapter of Tanayim. Okay, conditions that are articulated, in, you know, whether or not it has to be written up, we had that discussion by Gittin. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It matters, but we had another discussion regarding conditions, in that if a man makes a condition and attaching the kedushin to the condition, so that means to say that if the condition is fulfilled, the kedushin is valid. And if the condition is not fulfilled, the condition is not valid. And if we don't know if the condition is fulfilled, so then we're in a state of suffix. That is a wonderful summary, not only of the first part of today's daf, but really that's also summarizes yesterday's daf as well. Okay, good. Okay, now we get to really one of the cornerstones of discussions in the Gemara regarding conditions. You're making a condition. There are, I think I said this 7.5 years ago. I'm not going to play the tape. But there are conditions to how to make a condition. I may have said it 7.5 years ago, even if I did, it's cute. But it's true. There are conditions in terms of how to make a condition. So you want to make a condition, and you want the condition to be binding. So you have to formulate it a certain way. And so what are we going to do? We're going to look in the Torah, and we're going to see where conditions were met. Now, there are a number of times in the Torah where conditions are made. In fact, the last part of today's daf, I don't think I'm going to get there, but last part of today's daf, we're going to note that we're only turning to one chapter in the Torah, one episode in the Torah where we're going to be looking at how a condition was formulated, and we're going to be patterning ourselves after that particular episode. Meanwhile, of course, there are a number of other episodes in the Torah where there's a condition, and right now we're ignoring it. Later in today's daf, we're not going to ignore it, but right now we're ignoring it. Okay, what story are we turning to? We're turning to the story of B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven at the end of Sefer Bamidbar. Right, earlier this morning, we quoted from the end of Sefer Vayikra. At the end of Sefer Bamidbar, so we are on the threshold of entering into Eretz Yisrael. Right, we do have one more Sefer in the Torah. It's called Sefer Dvarim, but that is really Moshe Rabbeinu's farewell speech. Right. Entire Sefer, but that's basically what Sefer Dvarim is, a farewell speech. But the end of Sefer Bamidbar, as we're entering in, so there were a couple of wars that were already fought. We conquered the lands of Sichon and Og, and now the two Shvatim, Reuven and Gad, are looking around, and it's beautiful over here. Now, they're not in Eretz Yisrael proper. They are on the east side of the Yarden, but as they're looking around, so it's beautiful. They have a lot of pasture. They have a lot of sheep, a lot of flock. And so what they would like is, you know what? We are fine settling right over here in Aver HaYarden, on the other side of the Jordan. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, okay, but a quick reminder, we're going to go to Eretz Yisrael and we've got a war to fight. And what are you doing? You're going to stay here? Nothing doing. In other words, so what Moshe did is he made a condition. And the condition is that you're going to go into Eretz Yisrael and you're going to fight together with us. Okay. There is a bit of a discussion to be had on today's daf in terms of what the role is in the war. Because the term used in the Torah is chalutzim. And so chalutzim in modern Hebrew translates as like a pioneer. But chalutzim, and as far as the Torah is concerned, gives off a tone of not just that you're fighting in the war, but front line. In other words, you're going to be leading the war effort. Okay. So maybe that was part and parcel of the condition. And it happens to be an important point. I'm only touching it, but that's something to think about, something to consider. You can see Tosus over here, which we haven't even seen the Mishnah yet, but Tosus touches on that point. And so what we're looking at over here is specifically how Moshe Rabbeinu formulated the Tanai that was made to the Shvatim of B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. And basically now what that's going to serve is a model to how all other Tanaim are going to sound. In other words, in order for a Tanai to be a valid Tanai, it has to match in structure just like the Tanai of B'nai Gad B'nai Reuven. One more important point before we start with the Mishnah. What if you don't structure the Tanai well? In other words, there are conditions to how to make a condition. And let's say you just simply didn't do it right. Now what? So the condition is ignored. But whatever the action was or whatever the transaction was is going to be valid. Meaning that if you fail on the condition, the only failure is on the condition, not on the transaction. Transaction's still valid. It's just that the condition gets ignored. Okay, it's an important point. The Rishonim make it numerous times. Tosus, not in today's stuff, but Rashi in today's stuff makes it clear. Tosus in other places makes it exceedingly clear that when you fail on making the condition proper, the only thing that's lost is the condition, not the transaction. Okay. Let's begin. Rabbi Meir Omer Kol Tanai Sheinu Ketanai B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvain Einu Tanai. So, in order for a condition to be a valid condition, so it has to be stipulated in the same formula as B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvain. Otherwise, the condition's invalid. Shenemar Vayomer Aleihem Im Yavru B'nei Gad B'nei Ruvain Uksiv Im Lo Yavru Chalutzim. So what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? So he says the positive and he says the negative. The hain and the lav. The positive is that if you go with us, so then you will be receiving a portion. And if you don't go with us, then you will not be receiving that portion. Okay. And what comes out is the following, is that what we just learned together is rule number one with a condition, stipulation number one when it comes to a condition, and that is that you have to say both the positive and you have to say the negative. Meaning, here's what's going to be if you do this, and here's what's not going to be if you don't do this. Okay. And what's clear is that from Rav Meir, even though once you say A, we could deduce B, Rav Meir does not make that deduction. Otherwise stated, the Gemara throughout Shas says that according to Rav Meir, Mechlal Hein E Atashamei Alav. Rav Meir does not allow for deductions to occur. In other words, we're all smart, we could all make the deduction, but as far as making a Tanai proper, you have to say both the positive and the negative. And I can't deduce the negative from the positive, not as far as making a proper Tanai. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Omer, Tzarech HaDavar L'Omra. So Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel is going to push back on Rabbi Meir. You think that Moshe said both the positive and the negative because he needs to say both. And without the negative, we wouldn't have deduced the negative from the positive. Rabbi Chanina says to Rabbi Meir, you are mistaken. Because what would come out is the following. That had Moshe not said the negative, so then what would have in fact been deduced is that the B'nai Gad and B'nai Ruvain would get nothing in Eretz Yisrael. Meaning that if they failed to go over the Yarden and fight, they would forfeit all of Eretz Yisrael, receiving no portion of Eretz Yisrael whatsoever. And it would go without saying that they would not get the areas of the Eber HaYarden. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu had to say Beferish that that if they don't come over, so then they're not going to be receiving any of the Eber HaYarden, but they still will get a chelik in Eretz Yisrael. The way I just presented it is pretty much Rashi. In other words, I just presented the way Rashi presents it. I have to admit, even as I said it, I myself, it sounds weird. Meaning if they don't come over, this is according to Rabbi Chanina, if they don't come over, so they're going to lose Eber HaYarden, but they'll still get a portion in Eretz Yisrael. What? If they don't come over and fight, like, wouldn't it be more reasonable? Wouldn't it sound like it makes more sense that they should forfeit everything? You're not fighting together with the other 10 Shvatim? And you're still going to get a portion in Eretz Yisrael? So I have to admit that's strange. And what I'm just basically, what I'm articulating, what I'm saying out loud basically is that this is Tosfos' challenge on Rashi. See Tosfos inside for how he understands the Mishnah. He does not see it exactly the same way Rashi sees it. Anyway, we're going to go on and we're going to start with the Gemara. But just understand that it's a little bit difficult in terms of this particular detail. What would have happened had they not gone over? Okay, anyway. But we continue. So, Shapa Ka'amr Le Rabbi Chanina Gamlil Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. Rabbi Chanina is making an outstanding point. Meaning Rabbi Meir wants to use this as the model of how to make a Tanai. And you have to say the positive and you have to say the negative. Why? Because Moshe said the positive and the negative. I can't negative be deduced from the positive? No, not as far as the Tanai is concerned. As far as the Tanai is concerned, you have to say positive and negative. And Rabbi Chanina says back to Rabbi Meir, no. The negative over here had to have been stated, because had it not been stated, so then we would have walked away with an erroneous conclusion. And therefore, in this case, specifically over here, the negative needed to be stated. Okay. That's Rabbi Chanina's counter to Rabbi Meir. And the Gemara basically is co-signing on this point to Rabbi Chanina. Shapir kam, or le Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Rabbi Meir. So amlecha Rabbi Meir, isak adach alav lo tanai kafu da'asa lechtavim lo yavru v'nochzu b'sochachem. So, Rabbi Meir's counter-argument to Rabbi Chanina is the following. If the Torah would have just simply said, "Im lo yavru v'nochzu b'sochechem," so then you're right. In other words, that was necessary in order to dispel the erroneous conclusion. But be'eretz kenan lamali. So shma mina tanai kafu da'asa. So, but when it says Eretz Canaan, meaning Eretz Canaan is understood, right? Gad and Reuven are never going to be forfeiting a chelik in Eretz Yisrael, meaning that was never on the table. And by virtue of the fact that Moshe said the word Eretz Canaan when it's unnecessary, of course they're going to get a portion in Eretz Canaan. So that part is unnecessary. So why is that there? To teach me Tanai Kafel. To teach me that in order to make a Tanai, you have to say positive and you have to say negative. The negative is redundant. Yes and no. Meaning when it comes to making a Tanai, you must say it. Even though it could have been deduced from the positive, then nevertheless the negative needs to be stated.
Did Reuven actually get a piece of Eretz Canaan?
Did Reuven? Yeah. Right. You're asking, in other words, meaning you're asking about Sefer Yoshua? Meaning...
I'm asking right here. You saying
no? Right now, in other words, right now, what we're just simply looking at the psukim in terms of what are going to be the standards and necessary statements in order for tonight to be a tonight. Okay. In other words, how it actually played out, say for Yoshua, meaning. But in terms of we're right now learning about the rules of conditions. So Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, Ilo Kasav Rachman Beretz Kanan Havamina V'Nosu B'Sochachem Beretz Gilad, Aval Eretz Kanan Klalo. So, and as far as a counter argument, Rabbi Chanina would say the following: had the Torah said Beretz Kanan, let's do that again. Let's do it better. Had the Torah not said the word Eretz Kanan, so then you would have thought V'Nosu B'Sochachem. So Beretz Gilad. So maybe Nosu B'Sochachem. Look. You're going to receive a portion, but only in Eretz Gilad, meaning only in Eivor HaYarden. In Eretz Canaan, you're going to get zero. You're going to get nothing. Now, good. So that would have been the thought process and Moshe, in order to dispel that thought process, that's why he had to include the words Eretz Canaan. V'Rebbe Meir b'sochachem kol echad yislechu mashma. And Reb Meir's counter to that is no. When the Torah says "V'nochzu b'sochechem," it means wherever the Jewish people are. In other words, they're going to get a percentage of wherever the Jewish people are. Period. And therefore, according to Reb Meir, the words "Eretz Canaan" are totally superfluous. And since they're totally superfluous, so therefore, it allows Rebbe Meir to understand that this is now guiding us in the rules of conditions, the rules of Tanayim. You have to say positive and you have to say negative. How do I know that you have to say negative? Because Reb Meir argues that the words Eretz Canaan are perfectly superfluous. Okay, Tanya. So where are we right now? We have a very fundamental machlokas Tanayim in terms of what is a Tanai? What makes a Tanai? According to Reb Meir, the only thing that makes a Tanai is going to be positive and negative. You have to state both, here's what will occur if you do this, and here's what will not occur if you don't do that. Okay. By the way, as I'm listening to myself, I'm also realizing that there's other conditions that we haven't really spoken about. Rashi on the Mishnah, which, again, I didn't go through it inside. Rashi in the Mishnah treats us to other rules in terms of making a condition. One of them is that the Tanai has to be kon lamaisa. You have to make the condition before before the result. So in other words, I did a bad job. What you have to do is you say, if you go with us, positive. Then right, and then you will get. In other words, so the condition has to be stated first. And if you don't go with us, then you're not going to get. Okay, so the Tanai has to be kon lamaisa. And by the way, another point which I kind of glossed over, but I'll just mention it, and that is that this machlokes Rav Meir and Rabbi Chanina. Are they arguing about all the conditions of a condition, or are they only arguing about positive negative? Rashi sounds like, it doesn't sound like it, he says it, that they're only arguing about positive and negative, they're not arguing about any of the other conditions of conditions. Okay, so there's a lot over here. What I'm doing today is I'm just going to focus on the main point of the Gemara, and that is Hain and Lav, positive, negative. Again, according to Rav Meir, just quickly summarize where we're at. According to Rav Meir, the Tanai only is a Tanai. It's only binding when you say positive and negative. Even if the negative could have been deduced from the positive, that's insufficient. You must say positive and negative. Masha'in came according to Rabbi Chanina, so you have to, you don't have to say positive and negative. You say positive, that's sufficient. What about B'nai Gad, B'nai Ruvain? So Rabbi Chanina will explain to you, no. Moshe had to say the negative over there. Had he not said the negative, we would have arrived at an erroneous conclusion. So for purpose of clarification, in that particular case, Moshe Rabbeinu had to say negative. But otherwise, for a Tanai to be binding, you don't have to say positive and negative. Okay. That's where we are right now in this Machlokas Tanayim, about Tanayim. Okay. Oh, God. That was terrible.
That's a good one.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, you're my biggest fan. Okay. Tanya. Amar Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. We're on Samach Aleph Amud Beis. We're about a quarter of the way down. Not even. So Amar Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, Mashal Amad Davar Dova. Okay, so Rabbi Chanina says, I'm going to try to explain this to you via Mashal. And let's see if I can properly articulate and educate in terms of why I think this parsha is not giving us the basic rules, the ground rules of Tanayim. So the mashal goes like this: La'adam shayim mechalik nechasal v'vana v'amra ploni b'ni yirash. So they ploni so play uploni b'ni yirash. They ploni so ploni b'ni yitain masayim zuz v'yirash sad de plonis. V'im lo yitain yirash imachav v'shar nechasim. Okay, so dad is now writing out his will, and and basically, here's how he is allocating his estate. Son number one is going to get this land. Son number two is going to get this land. And son number three, if you give me 200 zuz, so then you're going to get this land. And if not, so then you're just going to receive your normal distribution, your normal allocation, as the laws of Yerusha would dictate. Okay, period. Now, mi garm lo li Yerusha mechav b'shar nechasim. So kfeila garmlo. So why did dad need to repeat himself for son number three? Son number three, if you give me 200 zuz, you're getting that land. Otherwise, he articulates, otherwise you're just going to be receiving your normal Yerusha. He needed to say that because had he not made that second statement, and he only left it for the first statement, we could have easily understood. Son number three, do you know when you're going to get any land? Only when you cough up the money. And if you don't cough up the money, now, if he would have left the rest of it unsaid, here's what we would have said. We would have said that if you wouldn't cough up any money, you get nothing. You get zero. Oh. That's why dad had to now go and say, and if you don't cough up the money, so that you're still in. Oh. Good. So now, Rabbi Chanina, in terms of making his point, you see the mashal, you see the nimshal, meaning Moshe is talking to B'nai Gad, B'nai Ruvain. If you go in and fight, so then you get this. And if the rest, was left unsaid, we could have walked away with the assumption that, and if you don't come in with us, and if you don't fight with us, you get nothing. Oh, so v'halo damya mashal lemas nisin. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. As much as the mashal was good, it's not a match, because hasam ketani yesh b'mashma shafil beretz kanan lo yinchalu ama kfeila leretz gilad nami mahani. So hacha ketani mi garam lo li rush im b'shar nechasim kfeila garam lo ama kfeila l'shar nechasim hu dekamahani. So the Gemara says, now wait 1 second. In our Mishnah, if left unsaid, what it sounds like is that they're still going to get a land, a part of Eretz Gilad, the Avar Yarden. They're just not going to get a land in Eretz Kanan. In the mashal that was just given, if the third son doesn't cough up the money, it sounds like he's getting nothing. Zero. So the Gemara says, Lokasha, Hamikama de Namele Reb Meir Venochzu, Halabasa de Namele Rebbe Meir Venochzu. So the Gemara says, well, where Rabbi Chanina was, we could break Rabbi Chanina up into two phases. In other words, before his conversation with Reb Meir and after his conversation with Reb Meir. We know that Reb Meir was challenging Rabbi Chanina. We just went through it inside. We also know that Rabbi Chanina defended himself. So the truth of the matter is that Rabbi Chanina himself went through himself a bit of an evolution of his own position. Meaning, you're right, there was a point where Rabbi Chanina believed that if left unsaid, they would have gotten zero. That's true. But then, after his dialogue with Rabbi Meir, so then Rabbi Chanina modified his position just a little bit. In other words, we're not saying that if left unsaid, they're going to get zero. If left unsaid, they're only going to get Eretz Gilad, a portion of Eretz Gilad, but they're not going to get anything in Eretz Canaan.
But how far apart are they now? How far apart are they now?
Oh, okay, fine. All right. In other words, in the modified version of Rabbi Chanina, they're not, right, in terms of B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, you're right. They may not be far apart. In terms of making a Tanai and a binding Tanai, they're still worlds apart. Because according to Reb Meir, a binding Tanai is only when you articulate both positive and negative. And according to Rabbi Chanina, a binding Tanai is only when you say the positive, even if you don't say the negative. Because the negative can be deduced from the positive. Okay. Oh, okay. Well, we're gonna pause. Okay, from this point going forward, we're on Samech Aleph Amud Beis, where we're starting with the words Bishlama. We'll start with that tomorrow. Right? From this point going forward now, we're going to survey the Torah. Because this is not the only condition that's in the Torah. There are a number of other conditions in the Torah. And between the end of today's daf and going into tomorrow's daf up into the Mishnah. So we're going to take a look at all the other conditions in the Torah and why we don't use them as a base model.